From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. We are The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we are nay Tasmania's, nay Australia's, nay South Pacific. No, that's not right. Nay, the Southern Hemisphere's biggest and most popular board gaming podcast, because we talk everything you can play on a tabletop, from board games to role-playing games to miniatures games to card games to anything that you possibly can think of. If it means not having to go outside and deal with the elements, good or bad, we're going to talk about it.
Well, and did you know, Leon?
Yes.
It's Mark here, by the way. Hello, everyone. We have just entered our sixth year of broadcasting here live in Edge Radio Studios and out over the podcast airwaves to the people all over the world.
Yes, this is episode 241. So some point in the last 6 years, we have talked about nearly anything you can think of that's played on one of those tabletop type games. And I'm joined, as you have known, by Mark, one of the founding fathers of the Dice Men.
Thank you.
And then by Garth, one of the founding nephews of the Dice Men.
I'll take nephew, that's fine. Cool. I'm still a bit young and occasionally with it.
Which would make me one of the, well, I'm not a founding, but what am I then?
Rambunctious
grandchild?
Just the relative that we don't really see it until Christmas time.
And the drunk one?
Yeah.
Hey, I'll take that.
Oh, well, you did buy yourself a nice bottle of Canadian whiskey, eh?
I certainly did. Because what else are you supposed to do on a hot day except drink Canadian whiskey to remind yourself that being cold is nice too from time to time?
Exactly.
So, Garthy
what have we
boy.
Got on this week, Leon, I hear you say?
Yes.
We've got games and games and then some more games.
Shocking.
Because tonight's show is going to be not one, not two, but three what we've been playing, if it all plays out as we expect it will.
Which it always does.
Mark?
We've got so many games we've been playing. I'm going to talk about a new game that I got from Kickstarter, Chronicles of Crime, that mixes virtual reality with real life, with crime, with fiction.
And now, all of those things.
Yeah.
That sounds lovely, Mark. That almost sounds like something we talked about before on possibly a lost episode that for some reason didn't air because there may have been or not
maybe
a thunderstorm in Hobart when that episode went out.
Yeah, technology may not be our friends, but we'll follow that up with Leon talking about going snorkeling, maybe?
Yes, the new game from Next Move Games, the people behind Azul, their next game in their series, if you will.
And then I will wrap this up with one of the most heaviest Euro games that you could possibly play, it is affectionately known as Cthulhu Plunk.
As you do.
But is otherwise known as Tower of Madness. So we will get to that. But before we do, we better throw to a song so that we can then steel our nerves, put on our hats, police and otherwise, because Mark is going to walk us through Chronicles of Crime. You are with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and here is your song.
Hi, I'm Jamie Stegmeyer from Stonemeyer Games, and you are listening to the Dice Men Cometh podcast.
Well, there you go. That was Sum 41 with My Direction, so elegantly sung, one of Leon's favourite rock and or roll bands. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now let's talk about something more interesting than Sum 41, which is a board game that we've all played, but not together.
That's right.
Oh, good times.
In the city of London, a team of forensic experts are sent out to crack the unsolvable cases. Homicides, robberies, and unimaginable crimes will not go unpunished. Proof of evidence and motive is key to locking the suspect behind bars. Find the hidden clues in the crime scene to uncover the trail to the truth. That is Chronicles of Crime.
Wow, Ernest reads Chronicles of Crime.
There you go. It's a game designed by David Kikurel, or something like that. Apologies, David. And produced by Lucky Duck Games, which was on Kickstarter. I think it must have been...
It was earlier this year,
yeah,
because
very early
we talked about in the missing interview when we talked about this, and the fact that is one of the best Kickstarter turnarounds we've ever seen, because it said, yep, coming out in 6 months or so, to which we went, yeah, and it did, which is just insanity.
Yeah, that's right, with no fuss at all. So what is Chronicles of Crime? It is a game where you cooperatively, one to however many people you want to get around the table, and we'll talk about that later, are solving crimes. Now, the one of the twists with this game is that you are using an app.
I know.
And the app is your friend. So you will have location boards. You will have witness and suspect cards. You'll have item and evidence cards. Those are the physical parts of the board. You've also got a planning board. You want to call it your murder board, that you are putting out cards to basically just organise yourself. But mostly this game is in the app and interacting between the app and the cards.
Yeah, it is. And I wanted to say how refreshing it is to open this box and go, wow, I set up this game in about no time whatsoever, because you've got one big board, you've got a couple of locations. The trickiest thing is putting out those evidence cards,
yeah,
which might say jewellery, or firearms, or melee weapons, or plants, or food, or whatever. But there's about 30-odd of those.
50, in fact.
50, and that's the bit that takes the longest time. But apart from that, you are ready to go really, really quickly.
And as Mark's got in front of him the rule book, I just want to quickly mention, because I like to mention me rule books, the first cover of the page, as Mark read out, the lovely text telling you what the game's about. The second page shows you a picture of the setup and how to do it. That is the correct way to make a rule book.
Yep. The other thing, of course, having an app is this game has a tutorial.
Mm.
So you can play through the tutorial, which was a very simple crime to solve, but it gets you to have a feel. So what's the situation? As I said, you've got location boards in the base game. Your location is London. You're moving about London, interrogating all sorts of London-type people, solving London crimes.
All sorts of slags and mugs. Right. And nice people as well.
And you know, the accents are optional.
Mm.
But basically, you start off in New Scotland Yard. Your boss tells you, oh, go and investigate whatever. Could be a dead body, could be a theft, and off you go to that particular location. When you arrive at the location, the game will tell you in the app that Joe Smith and Mary Jones are at the location. So then you can take those cards out of the deck of 55 character cards, which all lots of very interesting looking people, young and old, male and female, all sorts.
And some normal looking and some really freaky
looking.
Yeah,
that's
people.
Right, of course. You know,
but that doesn't matter, because they could be playing very different roles in any different scenario. That
exactly
you
right.
Going
Imagine
through.
You've got, there are 55 actors who are in the cast and can play so many different crimes. So, you know, as I said, you might have Steve and Mary who are at the crime. Now, if it's a crime where there's been a murder, maybe the first thing you do is you go and look at the murder scene. So you say to Mary or to Steve, I'm here to see the murder scene. And then the app opens up in what is the masterpiece of this game with the virtual crime scene. And this game includes a little set of sort of glasses type things that slip over your smartphone, and you hold it right up in front of your eyes and you turn around and you view the murder scene. Now, to me, that is one of the highlights of this game. I love looking at the crime scene.
It's also well made. It goes together easy, and it's easy to use. You see that when we first saw that on the Kickstarter page, we thought, well, that's a fun gimmick. Will it actually work correctly? It works as good as you could possibly want it to work.
Yeah, and look, spoilers, I love this game with two people, because obviously one person has the phone, they're standing up, they're spinning around, they're moving the phone up and down, looking at all the different things in the murder scene.
They're my wife almost walking into our fridge.
That's nice. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to take it a step back and go, how do you win, how do you lose this game? And it's all about time, because every time you do one of the things that you are asking about, you're moving to different locations, interviewing people, looking at murder scenes, all of that uses up time in the game, and it might cost you 5 minutes per conversation with a person at a particular location. I think it costs you 20 minutes of game time to move between locations. And then when you're looking through these little wonderful spectacles onto your app and seeing it in glorious 3D, you only get to look at it for, what, 30 seconds,
30 seconds.
And then it goes 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and cuts out. So your job is really to be hollering out,
yes,
I see some plants, I see some, oh, it's a body, oh my goodness, and now I see some signals, and now I see a gun on the floor and all of this bits and pieces, because that's where the teamwork is really at its most critical, because one of you is really doing that investigative side of police work.
Yeah, and even though it costs you more time, like in a normal crime scene, sometimes you need to get a second pair of eyes on it because you could be playing it with somebody that I know. So you might have a bit of pregnant brain about her and she might, say, miss a gigantic one-foot hypodermic needle that's sitting next to a murder victim and just not shout it out. So we spend the first 5 minutes going, we just don't even know what the murder weapon is. That, it was that. Yeah. Hi, Georgie. Okay. Hope it's all going well.
So, yeah, and look, the great thing is if you want more time, you can. It says, do you want to let someone have a look, or do you want another 30 seconds and you can have another look? But it is great. As I said, when I've been playing it with my partner, I'll take 30 seconds and she'll take 30 seconds. And while I'm yelling out, there's a pizza box, there's some papers in the rubbish bin, and there's blood on the floor, and there's a door, and she'll be scribbling those down. And then when we swap, I'll check through her list and see if there's anything that we've missed.
And it's worth mentioning, though, that you do not have to use those glasses. You can take them off and yes, use the non-VR mode where you just have the phone in front of you and just move it around, which is what my wife ended up doing because, okay, A, didn't want to walk into a fridge, but B, she wears glasses on the day-to-day basis. So, like, as I'm sure you guys would know that wear glasses, sometimes if you go to, say, a 3D movie, you've got to put them over your normal glasses, can be a bit of a pain. So the second time, she just used it normally, and if you don't want to use those glasses, that works out just as well.
And, of course, you can use this on, I mean, if you wanted to do that, I'd recommend something like an iPad or a tablet, so it's all a little bit bigger. But, yeah, the crime scenes are fantastic. It's a really great part of this
game. Yeah, and that's a really good point then, just to talk about the art style of this game, because the art that's on the cards is then, it's kind of replicated in the art style of the VR that you're going through. It's, I don't know, I'd almost compare it to, what's the company that did The Walking Dead and the Game of Thrones sort of point and click
Telltale
games? Telltale games. It's sort of that style
sort of
art.
Sort of lifelike, cel-shaded, comic.
Almost cel-shaded.
Yeah, so I played the tutorial, and then I also played one other scenario with my kids who are 8 and 10. One of the scenarios, there was a murderedly murder, of which there was a body that was lying on the ground, and my daughter at 8 didn't want to look at it. She was fine. My son at 11, virtually 11, he was completely fine because it's not grotesque, it's not gruesome. But it is certainly something that you do need to be aware of if you intend on playing this with younger kids. And I think they do recommend it for maybe, 12 or 14 and above, just because of those themes that are listed in the various scenarios that you're going to go through. But it is certainly something that it's not grotesque.
Yeah, and Mark will probably mention as well that there are two expansions for this game that are coming out soon. One is a noir type of setting that I'm guessing kids probably wouldn't have much interest in because it's kind of old-timey and whatnot. But there's also another one that's kind of like a high school horror-y type setting that I'm guessing is probably going to be a bit more of the gore type situation.
Well, it looks like almost a maybe Scooby-Doo, but, you know, in that you've got a gang of teenagers trying to solve crimes. But I think you're right. I think there might be a bit of gore in there.
A bit more slasher type thing as opposed to normal murder.
The noir is a sort of like 1950s LA. You can be a cop or you can be a private eye. And those ones, I haven't looked at any of the missions yet, but those ones, just looking at some of the art and the way they have the, which one is it? The Welcome to Redview, which is like the teenage one set in the 80s. It's almost a bit role play because you have a number of special characters, and they have special abilities. Mm. So it's introducing something different, but that doesn't come in the base game, which as I said is sort of, you know, modern day London crime.
Now, I just want to get you to talk about how you actually progress in these scenarios.
Yes.
So what do? You've just gone to the crime scene, you've looked around, now what?
Yeah, so what you have is you have, as I said, the evidence cards, which are, there's about 50 of them that say newspaper, guns, plants, anything that you could find in a murder scene, and I guess being fairly generic. So what you then do is you have to question, say Mary and Steve are the two people that are there, you question Mary about those things. So you scan Mary's card. All the cards have a QR code on them. So you scan Mary's card, which means now you're talking to Mary. So then anything you then scan is in the, they call it an interrogation mode. You're asking about Mary. So then I might have the card that says food because I see a pizza box at the crime scene. So I scan the food card while I'm interviewing Mary, and Mary will say, yes, it looks like they all had pizza, or, oh, that was our leftover pizza from the office party last night, or there's nothing here to do with food, in which case you've messed up. And then you might say, oh, smartphone, and like, oh, yes, that phone there, that's John, who's the victim, it's John's smartphone. And all of a sudden it'll say, you found a piece of evidence, and then you can get the special, think there's a special, there's a set of special cards, special items that usually are the bits of evidence that you're going to use to finalise the crime. That then means, once you've finished talking to the people at the scene by scanning the different cards, and you might then ask Mary all about those things, then you might ask John about those things, because John might be have been in a different place or seen something different. You can then, you've got these experts. So you've got a forensic scientist, you've got the coroner, you've got a hacking guru.
Criminologist, yeah. and the IT nerd.
Yeah, so you've got four people you can talk to. So you can go to your IT nerd. You scan his card, or he's on a location board, because they're a little bit different, but you scan his location board, which means you're there talking to him. Then, for example, you scan the smartphone, and he'll say, oh, let me analyse your smartphone. Oh, well, I found that some calls were made here, and it might say the last call was made to such and such. And then a name will pop up, and it'll say, brackets, card 27. And you know, oh, now I know that John Smith, who card 27, he's involved in this somehow, although maybe so far I don't know where he is, so you expect to come across him later. Or there's a laptop. Oh, he's cracked the laptop, and I found this letter, and it talks about he was having this bad correspondence back and forth with this person. Oh, we met them somewhere before. So you start to uncover clues this way. And the same with the body. The body will be one of the 55 people. So you go to the coroner, and you scan, after you're talking to the coroner, you scan the victim card, and it'll give you all the evidence from the body.
And very much like Sherlock Holmes' consulting detective, that's how you win or lose at this particular game, is when it all comes down to the, all right, I've done all the investigative stuff now, I don't need to do anything, I'm going to crack this case, I'm going to go back to Scotland Yard and present my evidence to the chief constable.
Yeah, but speaking of which, as you said, to be able to scan these different items to these different people, I think personally is by far the best feature of this entire game. Because as Garth mentioned, this game is very similar to that of the Sherlock Holmes consulting detective series. But the thing is with that is that obviously it's just a book. It's just a stagnant paragraph. And the amount of times in that game we'd gone to somewhere and go like, right, we now know this person was lying about what they said earlier. You go to a certain location on the map and talk to them and it isn't brought up. And it just, it annoys you to no end. Whereas here, you've got specifically, I'm going to take this bit of evidence to this person. They spoke to me last time. They didn't say anything about it. Now I'm going to go there with that evidence. And they're going to change what... So the game evolves as... Like with a video game, it evolves as the story progresses, which, because it's app-based, is a huge positive.
And that is so cool. It is so much more immersive. I find, on the flip side, what drags me out of this is that there is no actual audio. It would be so good if there were voice actors being able to do this. And I understand that would take a hell of a lot of work. But when you go and interview Mrs. Miggins in her pie shop and you've just presented her with a really bloody shovel, and then it's...
Well, Constable, I found this shovel in my backyard while I was digging up some meat for the
prize. Well, no, you don't get that. You get... Well, Constable, I was digging up this in the backyard with my thing, and well,
Garth,
it was this.
Well, you need to stop playing with monotone Bill.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's never fun.
when I play this game, I am Mrs. Miggins. I am Steve Jones down at the quarry. But you're right. I think that it is a missed opportunity. Who knows? Maybe they could improve it. I wanted to say something else I can't remember. Oh, so you go back to New Scotland Yard, and there's a button that says solve the crime, and then you basically answer some questions. But it's your classic detective thing of, you know, means, motive, opportunity. They might get some bonus questions. There's also, we found in some of the scenarios, they link together. So in the first one you can do after the tutorial, it's a three-part one, which is really nice, and it sort of goes easy and medium and hard. I think there's four or five scenarios, and I said some of them are multi-part, that you can do in London. The two expansions that I've seen at least have another four or five scenarios, some of which may be multi-part. So there's a lot that you can do. And then clearly when you look at the app, clearly their intention is you'll be able to buy extra content that, because of the way the game is set up with the items and the people, you could have millions of cases.
Absolutely. So look, I really enjoyed the couple of games I played, but we only played, as I say, three of us. And when two of them were kids, it was really... a bit of a, you know, more of the experience and whether we solve it. It's okay, child number one, what do you think we should do? Let's go there. And I wasn't really too worried about the time frame and the limit and cracking it as quickly as possible. But that was fun. They loved it. But it's because we were constantly engaged. All three of us were doing something together very, very quickly.
And one of the things that you discover with the time part, and, you know, depending obviously on how long you take, is we went to one location and we were told that two people were there. We started speaking to the first person, although we knew the second person, we were a little bit interested in him, but we wanted to get some background on him before we spoke to him. We finished speaking to the first person, and then the app popped up and said, as soon as you finish talking to Mary, you discover that John left in a hurry. Like, what? And then you've got to go to other places and hope he's going to turn up there. Although sometimes you get a hint. Oh, sometimes he goes and buys drugs at night at the park or whatever. But so the time does come in there. And same as your boss will tell you at the start, I want you to report back here at the end of the day and give me a briefing. If you don't, you think, oh, I'm just going to go and ask a few more questions, you know, the app will pop up and go, you've got a phone call from your boss. He's now really cranky. He says, get back here straight away.
That's
so
right.
there is that time pressure that you I guess you don't have with the Sherlock.
Indeed. Yes. All right. So let's switch this from what the game is to what we think of this game. And who wants to go first?
Well, I've got two things that I need to mention about my experience with playing this. First thing, we were playing the game, going about it all fine, and then my cat did something funny, and I wanted to take a photo because I'm one of those guys. Follow our Instagram and I'm sure you'll find out. And the app, I didn't close it, but it went away. And we thought, that's it, we're done. We've halfway through a case, we're done-skis. It's not going to remember everything we pressed and what time, whatever. We're done. But we were literally about to pack it up. I went back into the app, and it said, I went back into that mission just to, I think I was just trying to check something or even start it again. But then it said, do you want to continue where you left off? And I went, ooh, press continue, and we were right back to where we'd supposedly closed it.
Awesome.
Which is a brilliant thing. Now, the negative I'm going to say about this game, because I'm probably the least positive of this of all of us, very sadly. The thing about, as I said, with Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, which you have to compare this to, because it's obviously a big inspiration for this game. That game, you could play at a dinner table with a couple of people. You could play it with like 10 people, because all it is one person reading from a book and everybody else discussing where they want to go and whatever else. Maybe somebody writing notes if they want, but you could do it around a big old table and have no hassle with it, right? This game, we played on my new gaming table, which we've talked about before, is rather sizable. We played it with only four people, but we had a hell of an annoying time because the fact is you only use one device when you play this game. And we had to pass my phone back and forth to everybody else. And it was an absolute pain.
Absolute. I get it.
And the thing is, I do not know why this couldn't have, like, you could join a game where everybody's connected to it. So everything comes up on somebody's screen. You could even do a thing where, just in case you want to play with people that might be a bit impulsive, you could do a thing that every time you scan a code, everyone has to click, do you want to scan this, yes or no, just so you don't have people running away with, oh, I'm just going to scan things like crazy. And I think that would make this game so much more better, because I will play it again, because it's definitely interesting and it's got a lot of pros to it, but passing that phone back and forth was a thing that took me out of it and annoyed me no end.
Well, you just look at Alchemists, the game that requires you to scan the couple of ingredients that you have when you're trying to do all this alchemical stuff.
Yep.
That quite simply says, this is your unique code, and it is J5347B. And as long as everyone puts that code in, you're all playing the same game on any number of devices. So it shouldn't be a hard thing to implement.
The Steam games, the Jackbox party packs, which are brilliant when you've got people over and everyone's got a smartphone, they're exactly the same. You go to a website, type in the same code, and you're all connected via, if you're all on the same Wi-Fi that is in that house. It's really not that hard to do.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's something they can bring in down the track. Now, for me, as I said, I played this with my partner. We love the exit room games. We love Sherlock Holmes. And we had an absolute ball with this. And I did think straight away, because you're doing a lot of scanning of codes and reading out to each other from the phone. I did think at the time, this is perfect with two people. You can play it with one. I don't think it'd be anywhere near as much fun, but obviously you can. But once, for me, I thought, oh, I don't know if I'd play this with three or four, just because of that, the passing phone around, and there would be a lot of downtime.
Which
so,
is a flaw, though, because this game is sold not as a two-player game.
Yeah.
In a game that's specifically two-player games, they will always push it that way first. Things like, say, your Star Wars Rebellion, they'll say, you can play with more if you want, but this is a two-player game. Whereas this, not a word was ever said about
it. I guess
that.
You could have your iPad in the middle of your table with your dinner party. But look, I'll agree, perfect for two players.
All right. Well, there you
look, I have loved it. I've been waiting to get it back from you, Garth, because we can't wait to play the next one.
Clearly. Well, I really enjoyed it. My kids really enjoyed it. I'd play it again. I like how the crimes are small and quick, so you can play it really quite quickly.
Yeah.
It's not a whole night thing. You can play one in an hour easily enough, which is great. So that was Chronicles of Crime. Mm. I also only found out today that the designer designed Cutthroat Caverns. Hasn't really done anything else, but did Cutthroat Caverns, which I love.
Yeah.
And this. So that was quite interesting. There you go. Just as a little aside. So anyway.
Good on, David.
We will cut to a song, and then we'll come back and talk about swimming through the oceans, aren't you, Leon?
Yeah, something about
it. You're at the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we will be back after a song.
Hi, this is Matthew Dunstan, and you're listening to the Dice Men Cometh, the best podcast in Australian board gaming.
That was System of a Down with X here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, where we, the Dice Men Cometh, talk about board games and card games with the X Factor. See what I did there?
Wow.
We've been playing so many games, because we've been buying so many games, let's face it, there are so many games for sale out there new. There are so many games for sale out there on various Facebook groups for second hand. I've been picking up so many. Garth, you went to a whole convention about playing games recently, and you played this one as well?
I did get to play Reef, yes. And anyone who does follow us on Instagram would have seen I did a little motion lapsy thing and condensed the whole game into about a minute of video. We won't talk about the result of the particular game. But I will hand it over to Leon to tell us what the hell this game is and why should we play it.
Observe the growth of nature's most beautiful and exotic natural structure, the coral reef.
Wow.
All right, well, that's it. That's pretty much the gist of the game.
Yes, you get to play rival coral reefs.
Yeah, because we've always wanted to do that. Now, a little backstory about this game. The game is designed by the man known as Emerson Matsuchi. Who is he, you might ask? He's the man who's made Century Spice Road, which was a big hit last year or even the year before. And he is designing... Yeah, thank you for pointing at the screen, Mark. Yes, he also had a hand in Spectre Ops, which is a bit good. And what was the other one you pointed at? Oh, Crossfire.
Crossfire, yes.
But he also is the designer of a game coming out next year, which is a Metal Gear Solid board game, which is one of my favourite video game series ever. Just don't ask me about the most recent one, because Blair. But yes, he's doing that. However, that's not necessarily the biggest thing about this game. What the biggest thing about this game is it's the second game from Next Move Games, who nearly everyone will know this day and age because they are the people that made the biggest game in the last 12 months, arguably. But from sales-wise, not even arguably.
Well, and you can buy a giant edition of it.
Which is Azul.
That's right. Winner of the Spiel des Jahres last year. This year?
Yes. So this is the second game in the kind of... It's not a sequel, but it's the second game in the series. So think, if you will, things like how Rising Sun is kind of the spiritual successor to Blood Rage, how... Inish and Kemet were the spiritual successor to Sicily's, the Matago series. This is kind of the next game in their series. Yeah. And you can see when you look at the mechanics of this game, because the whole idea of what Next Level wanted to do is they wanted to make games that you could play over and over again for years to come, but were so, so simple.
Yeah, well, if you go to the next... Was it Next Move Games, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
They have a little intro, and their intro is all about the games they make, but they highlight and uppercase all of the four-letter words because they are all about four-letter words, saying that games should be mechanically very simple while then giving you a whole bunch of interesting decisions to make. So they've got Azul, A-Z-U-L, they've got Reef, R-E-E-F, and they'll have no doubt more four-letter games coming out soon.
Indeedy-do. Now, but how do you play this game? So what you do is you have a player board out in front of you, like a lot of games. Now, on your turn, you will do simply one of two things. You will take one of the cards from the middle of the board and you will put it in your hand, or you will play a card from your hand to the board and do the actions on it, which, of course, there are two things, one of which is putting some coral pieces on your lovely board, and the other one is scoring those coral pieces depending on the different orientations they are on the board. And that's it.
Yes.
You do that until the game is over.
Correct. And it makes it sound really easy.
Yep.
And most of those things are really easy. The picking up a card, that's pretty easy. Mm. I think you can only have a hand limit of four, so you do need to quite... sort of be strategic in the game, the cards you're going to choose. But putting down a card and then placing a couple of bits of reef is easy because there are, is it four different colours of reef?
There are four different colours, yep, yellow, green, purple and orange. And when you place them, you can place them on the player board. You can also stack them on top of each other. Mm. And then once you do that, the colour that's on the top kind of becomes the prominent colour and is for that stack at least when it comes to scoring and things like that. And the actual
pieces for this game, which there's not that many of. It's not a very big game. The pieces of coral are really, really nice, and they do stack together very, very nicely.
They do, and they look good when they're all on the player boards growing, and you do certainly get a sense that this is your own private reef and that the decisions you're making are ultimately affecting the way it looks. But the problem is it's also affecting how it scores, and that was my problem. Yeah. I had a really good-looking reef. It just didn't score particularly well, and this is where it comes down to what you were saying is your second action, Leon.
Yeah.
Where you play a card, and the card will basically have a picture of the colours that you were able to then take out of the central pool and put into your particular reef, and then you've got to score it. And scoring it is going to be the orientation and possibly the height of certain coloured pieces. They've got to be in a certain configuration for points to score, and you'll get multipliers if you're able to get the same configuration duplicated on your reef a couple of times. But gee willikers, that is hard to get consistently every single time. So the whole process involved in this game, I find, is about having the four cards that you've got in your hand and really trying to chain the best processes out there to maximise those points.
Yeah, and another thing that it does is cool, because the three cards in the middle that you can choose from, there's also the deck that you're drawing from, but the card on the top of that deck is turned face up. So every time a new card comes out, you will know there's essentially four cards you can pick from. However, if you want to take a card that's just been revealed from that deck, so the newest one in play, you have to leave a coin, or essentially a victory point, on one of the other cards that are out in the field, and they have certain numbers on them, and the ones with the lowest value numbers, they're the ones you have to put coins on. They're the ones that will probably score you the least amount of victory points, or even they're the simpler ones to do. You have to put coins on them. So it gives you that, oh, that new thing's come out, I do want to take that, however, I don't really want to give up my coins and all that kind of stuff. So it gives you that decision, as well as this game has an interesting, I guess it's end-of-game scoring mechanic, in the sense that when the game is over, which will happen when one of the stacks of the coral has run out, or if all the cards in the middle of the table have run out, which I highly doubt would happen, but you never know, what happens is that you then get to score all the cards left in your hand.
Yes.
Okay. So you could have a card that's been in your hand the whole game from drawing the first hand, that by the end of it you're like, oh, I did actually achieve that, and you get to score it. Or at some point there's like, well, that there, I'm not going to score any points on now. However, based off what I've got in my hand, what I can see what's coming out, based off what everyone else on the table is doing, I reckon if I pick that up now and this game goes at least five or six more rounds, that's going to be a monster for me.
Okay. Yeah, the only difference with that at the end of game is that you don't get to multiply it.
No.
So if you've got, you know, a card that says you will score 2 points for every two green bits of reef next to each other, and you've got that four times on your board, you only get to score it once.
Okay.
Whereas if you play it during the game, you'd get to do the multipliers. But it is, I mean, it's a good way to get a bit of extra end-game scoring. You certainly don't get as much benefit as if you're able to play the card during the course of the game, but it's better than just having four cards at the end of the game that you just throw out.
I mean, apart from the cute-looking little plastic corals, it is quite a gorgeous-looking game. I did note the art is by Chris Quilliams, or Quilliams. He did Archipelago.
Ooh.
Which I didn't sort of, it didn't jump out and grab me when I saw the box, but and a few others. He also did the art for Azul and the new Azul, the stained glass one. So he's been quite busy. I haven't played this yet, but my thought just from your description is one of the amazing things about Azul is it's so easy to teach.
Mm-hmm.
You basically, you're playing the game bang like that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this sounds, yes, you're going to be, you can pick up the game because it's easy to place a bit of coral and to play a card. But the strategy of scoring, I think, in Azul, it's fairly readily apparent what you need to do to score points. In this, it sounds like it could be a little bit tricky.
Well, it could be a bit more thinky. People could definitely spend a bit more time, I think, on deciding what they want to do, whether they want to play cards now to put stuff, or you want to grab stuff out of the middle and stuff like that. There's also a mini expansion for this that's just about to come out soon, which is called The King of Coral, which adds two little fish that you can add to the board, which you can move around, which does various different little things. So that'll be interesting to see if it changes much of it, which I reckon it probably won't.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the game. There's not a lot to it, and it is probably even lighter than Azul, which I don't know how it's possible, but it is. Probably aimed more towards kids, because like Azul's all well and good, but if you wanted to play this like with really young kids, that maybe they might not be able to pick it up, but they probably would.
I think it's an easier sell to younger audience.
Yeah, because it looks so pretty and whatnot. But yeah, that's the thing. But the thing I wanted to talk about with Reef, which I found interesting, was Azul was a mega hit, right? There's no denying that. It was huge.
Yes.
This is the next game that came out after it. So again, I'll go back to that Matago series I talked about earlier. Cyclades came out, was very good. Comet was announced. People were really excited about it. Comet came out, was brilliant. And then Inish was the game after that. Your favourite game, Mark. Anyway, but people were really excited about two because they loved the two games previously. So it wasn't direct sequels, but were big, big fans of it. This game, I wouldn't assume it was going to sell the same as Azul, but I thought it was going to do well. Yeah. However, it kind of came out to a bit of a eh. And I don't know if that's because it's a bit simpler even than Azul, and a lot of people are like, well, Azul's fine, but it's a bit kind of simple. But my theory is this, is that before this game came out, they also announced Azul Stained Glass, which is a sequel to Azul. So you could say this is in a similar series or similar line or a spiritual successor, but it's not the exact sequel. So my comparison, as I said before, that when we were told about Inish coming out and I looked at it and went, that looks cool. Box art doesn't, but the game looks good and I love the two games previously. I'm excited. However, if at the same time they'd announced Kemet 2 was coming out, could not have cared less about Inish. And I think that's what Reef has suffered from a little.
Yeah, okay.
Discuss.
Well, Mark, do you want to go first?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that where the Madigo games are aimed more at your gamer, even though they are that American style of game with minis, the gamer is more likely to go, I like that game, I'd like to look up more games from that company or more games from that designer. Whereas I think Azul has such broad popularity that people aren't necessarily going to go, what's the next one? They're probably still playing Azul. For a lot of those people.
Oh, I'm not comparing these games in any way, just the situation that they're in.
No, I know what you mean. And I think maybe that's why people who had Azul didn't definitely rush out and buy this, because maybe they're not such gamers where they've got to get the new thing, they're looking for that hot buzz, and clearly the games, you know, that yes, they've got four letters in their title, yes, they're both attractive, but you don't look at them and go, oh, yeah, I can see there, you know, in a similar vein. I don't know. Maybe that was part of the reason.
But there was also a short time frame between the releases as well. And as we've seen on Kickstarter now, it's a very smart thing that when a game from Kickstarter gets into people's homes,
yes,
about a month later you put a sequel or a new version up on Kickstarter and it goes gangbusters. But sometimes like this it might not work,
yeah,
because like, well, we're still playing Azul, so we don't need the new one. But as I said, literally if you said to somebody, you like that Azul game, and they go, yeah, I loved it, you point them, go, well, this is Reef, it's in the same kind of series. And they go, well, the next one has the word Azul written on it.
Yes.
So, well, I want that one. I don't care about this Reef game. I don't care if it's made by the same company. Couldn't care less. That one's got its name written on it.
Yeah.
So I think it was a little bit of a nail in its own coffin before it even had a chance to get out of the block.
I think you're probably right. I also think it's just not as good a game.
No, and it's not. It was not as much to it, that's
for
sure.
I think a lot of people played it once and went, wow, that looks pretty. And then they went, oh, I'd rather go and play Azul again. So the thing is that it doesn't scratch the same itch as Azul certainly does. And I think it's very much, there's that novelty factor of you growing your own reef and doing the 3D stuff is really quite cool. And it looks great on the table. But I just think there's a bit more random chance with the cards coming out. The scoring is just a bit of a nuisance. And I think the four people at the table, no one had as much fun as they had when you were working out your own really good solitaire puzzle that Azul was. And I think Azul just is a much better game. So once players got over the, oh, this looks really pretty, they just said it's not as good.
I think also you said it sort of came out not to a lot of fanfare. This was teased really, really early, I would say at Gen Con, maybe 2017 at least. And I think we saw it appear at lots of conventions. There were lots of photos of, oh, this is coming. And I think because it didn't get the buzz from those conventions where people were like, oh, you wait, you, this one comes out, this is going to be the next big thing, there was none of that at all. And so maybe that is also part of the reason why it sort of just fell off on the shelf and it was there.
It's number 25 abstract game on BGG, so it's not a bad game, though.
Yeah.
No.
But there's certainly a lot of wiggle room in the abstract category. I think you've got a couple of really highly placed and well-regarded games, and there's a bit of also-rans in there. So.
Well, it's a bit abstract, isn't it? You can't tell with people and games that are abstract. You just can't tell.
I just like the fact it's quick, but I would like it to be quicker.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those ho-hums. You know, if someone says, do you want to play it? I go, yeah, okay. If it's a filler, but it's just a bit too long for that.
And I hope it's not one of those games where people see it and go, wow, and then the play is such a letdown from that then they go, oh, board games. Let's go back to
It's certainly not that bad. It is Far Cry. For me, it is just not good enough.
Yeah, the point being is that it'll always be compared to Azul.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's not as good as Azul. No. It looks pretty and probably slightly better for play with younger kids than Azul would be because it's an easier sell, even though Azul looks nice as well. But yeah, at the end of the game, it's worth a crack, but yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So just go snorkeling in real life and look at real reefs while you still can. Is that what you're saying?
Well, put it this way. People that know this show and know it well, I haven't sold it.
No.
I've had it for a few months and I've played it and there I haven't sold it. So
ooh, that's saying
must,
a lot, actually.
It must be all right.
And on that bombshell, we better throw to a song and then we'll come back and I will drive you all mad. Maybe. Anyway. You're the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We will be back again after yet another song.
Hello everyone, sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support the Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, and that was the Dropkick Murphys with the Worker song. Apt for me at the moment because I'm working fun 80-hour weeks, and also it happens to be one of my favourite songs everest in the history of ever. Now, Garthy boy.
Yeah.
All this work has been driving me a bit mad.
Oh, really?
And at work, we have a tower, so you're going to tell us about
Cthulhu Kaplunk.
Oh. I thought
which
I
will
it.
Drive you mad because this game, in inverted commas, is a game. So, this game...
30 to 45 minutes for Cthulhu Kaplunk, you say?
Is called Tower of Madness, and in this particular game, 3 to 5 investigators will try and survive against all of the elder things by rolling dice and then dragging out tentacles out of this wonderful Kaplunk clock tower, and then really that's it.
I remember I teased this probably... Well, 6 or 8 months ago.
Yeah.
I teased it, I think, when it was announced that it was coming out. Mm. And when we, you know, you sort of read the description talking about Madison stuff. And then when you boil it down to, it is literally Cthulhu-themed Kaplunk.
So let me give you the story. Yeah, so you're okay. All investigators. You're all trying to do certain things. The way it's going to work is that you'll have this, they go into great pains to explain it, that is a foot-high tower. That you will then put your 30 green tentacles in there and you will put the 4 different colours of marbles in there and then you will start the game. The way you're going to go is you're going to flip over location. The location will have potentially a bit of a round-altering ability and essentially you will then roll some dice and trying to get the right results. You might try and get a brain and a heart and a mind and then some numbers. And that's all. If you get the prerequisite rolls in Yahtzee style, you can roll up to 3 times. You've got to keep at least 1. If you do that, you succeed. And some of the dice you've got to get numbers on, and the higher the number on those 2 dice means how much you succeeded by, kind of. And then the next person has a go, and if they roll and succeed and their success number is a bit higher, they are then winning. So... then that's how the game works. And whoever has the highest number on that round, they win that particular location, which will then give them points. And whoever has the most points at the end is going to win. And that sounds pretty boring.
So it's more fun to try and go mad and insane, which you do by failing the dice rolls, which you have as much chance of doing as you do in succeeding, because it's just random chance. But if you go mad, you get to pull out a tentacle from the tower and you hope for dear God that you do actually pull out marbles, even though you're not meant to, because you don't want the marbles to come out, but pulling them out is the more fun bit. And you've got these four marbles. If they come down, they go onto your player board. And some of them are good. Some of them will give you bonus points. Some of them will make you mad, and that's bad. And some of them will bring out Cthulhu. And if three of those dice, and there's only three of those marbles.
You've lost your marbles die, Garth.
Are ever out of this tower, the game is over. And it's kind of it. You've got some cards that will allow you to do certain abilities on your turn that might allow you to manipulate some dice rolls or interrupt someone else's turn. But that's kind of it. And you're doing it for 30 to 45 minutes, which is way too long.
Mm. And sounds like they took the fun part of Kaplunk, which is all the marbles coming crashing out or whatever.
Yep.
And then made that the thing that you're trying
not to
avoid.
Yes. Well, I did another one of these time-lapse videos because I thought, this is going to be great.
Yes.
And then you look at it, and we might have to put it up on Instagram. And for the first three quarters of it, it doesn't look like anything's happening because you can't see enough of the tentacles being pulled out. Yeah. And then it's just over, and it's not particularly fun.
Tower looks cool, though.
Yeah, the tower does look cool. Did I mention it's a foot high?
There was some talk of it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's really all I've got to say about this game.
I mean, the tentacles are obviously plastic. The tower itself, describe it to me, Garth.
It is a foot-high church tower.
You mentioned.
Where, you know, if you were to put it on a table, you could probably raise it up about 30 centimetres, and that's where the top would be, or about a foot.
A foot?
It has, 12 inches, I reckon.
It has a separate roof attachment to it.
Okay.
Which
made of plastic?
No, it's just cardboard. It's pretty good.
Does that add to the foot, or is that included?
Including in the foot. Okay. But we found that when you put the roof on, it actually didn't quite work properly, so we played it without the roof. But we did maintain foot highness.
Not thematic at all, then, playing without the roof.
For me, if you've got some disposable income and you choose to buy this game, buy it to play it and have a little bit of fun. But then use the tentacles on your next barbecue because they are fantastic chicken skewers, I reckon. They might melt, but that's the price you pay for potentially going mad.
They're obviously all tentacly, the bit that sticks out of the tower. What's the bit, because I can't see them in the photo, what's the bit that's inside the tower? It's just like a...
Oh, it's like a slice, like a knife.
Okay.
Yeah, it's exciting.
I tell you what, the good thing, though, about this game being absolute rubbish by the sound of it, is that if it gets so heavily discounted down to like $20 or something, I think I would legit have that 1 foot tower, like sitting down in my man cave or something, because it looks kind of cool.
I reckon you could actually, if you put in the right tentacles in the right configuration, make it into a pretty awesome dice tower.
Ooh. Maybe that's how they should have sold the damn thing.
So I would love to be able to talk about this game for longer, but there isn't anything involving a game that I really want to talk about.
I just had a brain lightning wave. Has there ever been a version of like a Kaplunk where instead of marbles, it is dice, and when they fall down, like depending on the number or the colour, certain things will happen in the game or whatever else? Patent pending, copyright?
Well, wasn't there a game that Kevin Wilson of Descent fame put out on Kickstarter only a couple of months ago that did something like that? You were climbing up a tower.
Maybe.
I can't remember exactly.
But I think that's a hell of an idea I've just come up with.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Fireball Island, which is the marble rolling one. That's just
slightly different.
Yeah.
So anyway, this was one of the games that we played when I was at Essen Unplugged only a couple of weeks ago. While Terry was actually learning Reef, Trent was at the other table learning this, and we played Reef first, and then we followed it up with this, and they were the two lightest games that we played all weekend. So look, I'm sure if you're really into Cthulhu and you're waiting for people to arrive, it's one of those games where you just play till it's fun, but it stops being fun pretty quickly.
I could see you three who all love a heavy game at the best of times playing Reef and then this and just sitting there and I'm sure drinking the whole time, though.
Well, of course, yes, you do see the beers go down in the time lapse. And this was after we just played Teotihuacan, so we probably needed something to give our brains a bit of a rest.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not something I could go and recommend, and I won't play if someone asks me to play it anymore.
So Reef is better?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, score one for the good guys.
Yeah, so this, judging by our past history, this will probably win the Kennerspiel, I reckon.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know that the Germans are going to go for what's it? Tower of Madness, Cthulhu Kaplunk.
No.
It's okay.
So anyway, tonight's episode, to episode 241, believe it or not, we started off with Chronicles of Crime.
A fantastic game.
We then delved or dove or swam through the reef, which is pretty much a ho-hum.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, I think you'd maybe like it, Mark, but I still have a strong sense that you would just much, much, much prefer Azul over this one.
I think so.
And then we finished up with the heavily strategic and absolutely no luck involved dice rolling kaplunkathon that is Tower of Madness. And that's where we're wrapping up this show with a nice little bow, I think.
I think so. And look, I'm very excited because in a couple of days, I will be having a chat to Colby, the big boss at Plaid Hat Games, and I hope to have that interview ready for next week's show.
Yes, the man behind Summon Awards, the best two-player game in our hobby.
That's, wow, what a way to end. Wow. How can we go any further than that? So we have been the Dice Men Cometh. You've been Leon, you've been Mark, and I have been Garth. We will be back next week as we get closer to Christmas.
Will we be different people next week or still us?
Oh, I'm happy to be a different person most of the time, actually. Okay. Cool. And I think we are going to tease you with some Christmas ideas next week.
Yes.
So if you've got a family full of gamers or a gamer in your family or just someone who you want to bring into the hobby, I'm sure we can help out with some suggestions. We've been the Dice Men Cometh and we are now out of here. So bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.